ओम ज्ञान तिमिरंधस्य ज्ञानंजन शलाकाय चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Man who spread a seat of kushas and kashas and worshipped the Lord, the personality of Godhead, by whose grace he had obtained the rule of the terrestrial globe. In other words, the earth. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Manu is the father of mankind, and therefore from Manu comes the word man, or in Sanskrit, Manusha. Those who are in a better position in the world, having sufficient wealth, should especially take lessons from Manu, who acknowledged his kingdom and opulences to be gifts from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus always engaged in devotional service. Similarly, the descendants of Manu, or human beings, especially those who are situated in a well-to-do condition, must consider that whatever riches they have are gifts from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Those riches should be utilized for the service of the Lord in sacrifices performed to please Him. That is the way of utilizing wealth and opulence. No one can achieve wealth, opulence, good birth, a beautiful body, or nice education without the mercy of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, those who are in possession of such valuable facilities must acknowledge their gratefulness to the Lord by worshipping Him and offering what they have received from Him. When such acknowledgement is given, either by a family, nation, or society, their abode becomes almost like Vaikuntha, and it becomes free from the operation of the threefold miseries of this material world. In the modern age, the mission of Krishna consciousness is for everyone to acknowledge the supremacy of Lord Krishna. Whatever one has in his possession must be considered a gift by the grace of the Lord. Everyone, therefore, should engage in devotional service through Krishna consciousness. If one wants to be happy and peaceful in his position, either as a householder or citizen or member of human society, one must promote devotional service for the pleasure of the Lord. Manu is the father of mankind. Father is generally considered in the modern age simply a physical function, but it's much more than that. A father has responsibility not only for the material well-being of his offspring, but even more particularly for the spiritual welfare. Therefore, Guru Nasasyat, Swajana Nasasyat, Pita Nasasyat, Janani Nasasyat, Daivang Natatsyan, Napatis Chasatsyan, Namochiyad Yah Samupeta Mrityam. One should not take the position of Guru, father, mother, relative, worshipable person, one should not accept respect for others, unless one is able to deliver his dependence from birth and death. So Manu has a big responsibility, being the father of all humankind. So it is his duty to instruct them in their ultimate welfare, that human life is meant for freedom from birth and death, for making that endeavor to get free from birth and death. There are so many verses. There's Nayam deho deho bhajam riloke kashtan kaman arhate vidhujam ye. Tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam shudyat yasmad shudyat brahma sokyam tvanantam. Rishabdev said that, instructing his sons, as the father of his sons, he took the responsibility to instruct them, that having attained this human birth, one should not live like pigs. Yesterday I was saying something about the piggish outlook or piggish mentality. It's not my invention. It's not a joke either. It's a fact. Because the pigs, they're simply interested in gross sense gratification. And for them, eating stool is very nice. You don't see in this country, you don't even see pigs. Only you see cut up pigs in the supermarket. But in India, that's common enough up to the present day, that pigs, they eat what we ate yesterday, processed food, naturally processed. In other words, the stool, what people pass out in the morning, the pig takes in. So Rishabdev is graphically comparing human life, passed for the sake of sense gratification, to pig life. You may think, well, this is very insulting. We're very aristocratic and we have nice buildings and we have etiquette, just like in good British etiquette. There are important rules. For instance, when you are sitting at the table to eat, don't put your elbows on the table. And make sure when you're eating soup, you have to tip the dish away from you, which is ridiculous. Not towards you, because it's bad etiquette. They made up some rules and they consider this to be indicative of aristocracy, that you should know all these things. But human life is rather defined by atato brahma jignasa. At least this is the higher level of human. The beginning level of human life is vanasham acharavata purushena paraf puman vishnor aradhyate panta nanyat tato shakaranam. Taking to the vanashram system is the beginning of human civilization from the Vedic perspective. Any other perspective? Well, it's piggish perspective, because it's simply based on sense gratification, even in the name of religion. So that vanashram based on service to Vishnu, and then the higher level of human life comes in not simply following the vanashram rules, but inquiring into the absolute truth. So Rishabdev is recommending, don't live like a pig. One should perform divine austerities, tupo divyam, so that one can become situated in eternal blissful life. Rishabdev is a good father. He also spoke this guru nasas, that one should not be a guru, father, mother, husband, relative, or worshipable demigod, unless one can instruct others how to be freed from birth and death. So Manu is the father of mankind. He's also the guru of mankind, because father means guru. Father is the guru of the family. Actually, the first guru is the mother, according to Shastra, because the mother teaches. She first of all takes care and teaches all the basic things. Nowadays, we see, just like when Prabhupada came to the West, he had to teach all aspects of human life, such as after passing stool, take a bath. And don't just wipe your backside, smear all the stool over your backside, but wash it thoroughly. And so many things Prabhupada taught. It's not the mantra guru, or one who teaches, gives the mantra upadesha, the spiritual knowledge given in the Vedic mantras. It's not his duty to teach that. That's the duty of the mother, especially teaches all these things. So she's called the first guru. And she not only teaches these things, but gradually teaches some basics of Vedic culture. Bow down to superiors. Yesterday you were asking about that, about bowing down. Yes, that should be done. That should, even the superiors are not devotees of Vishnu. But we see Prahlad Maharaj, he didn't follow Hiranyakashipu's instruction, but he bowed down to him. So that's good culture to maintain. It's good to respect elders. So the mother teaches all these things, gives a basic idea of God consciousness, and that is further imparted in childhood by, of course, the father. So he's the guru of the whole family. That's not just symbolic, you don't just say it like that, but actually the father is actually supposed to teach the wife. You say that the wife doesn't go to Gurukul, so I may think, well, they're not educated. Women are not educated in Vedic culture, but actually they are. But it's just a different system. They don't. They stay at home, and when they marry, their husband, who's been educated, he teaches them whatever he learns. That's what they're supposed to do. In essence, of course. So, your husband is the guru to the family, and then there are gurujan, the gurus, all elder persons and respectable persons, brahmanas. So in this way one learns, one acquires general knowledge of the Vedic culture, but that, and who is God, what is the purpose of life, and that is solidified and directed by the Diksha Guru. So Manu, he's Guru, both in the sense of being the father, he's the Guru of all mankind, because he's the father of all mankind. And he also fully discharges the duty of Guru by teaching. Here is being described about Swayambhuva Manu, who is one of the Dwadash Mahajan, one of the 12 great personalities, who are cited by Yamaraj as authorities on Bhagavad Dharma, Krishna consciousness. So we find that the Manus, they instruct in detail their sons, as in Bhagavad Gita we find that Vaivasvata Manu, another Manu, he heard directly from Krishna. Imam Vivasvate Yogam Proktavana Hamavayam Vivasvan Manave Prahur Manor Ikshvakave Bravit. So the son of Vivasvan is Vaivasvata Manu, and he being the father of humankind in that Manvantara, that age of Manu, he gave this knowledge to Ikshvaku, who passed this knowledge down through the chain of kings. That's a parampara of kings, which that's the Surya dynasty coming from Vivasvan, in which Lord Ramachandra appeared. So Swayambhuva Manu, he is the, as the father of mankind, he is a guru, not just by precept, but by practice also. He teaches by his personal example. That is the definition of guru. Acharya. Acharya means one who teaches by example. Achinoti yah shastrani. Acharya stapayati api. Swayam acharate yasmad. Acharyas tena kirtita. The definition of an acharya is one who acts according to shastra, teaches according to shastra, and inspires others also, or to act according, or directs others how to act according to shastra. So Manu is an acharya. He acts in a manner for the benefit of others. But that is natural. It's not that an acharya, he thinks, I have to act like this so others will be benefited. But the natural behavior of a pure devotee is that which is worth following by others. Because a pure devotee is naturally satatam kirtiyanto mam yatantas chadrudha vrataha namasyantas chamam bhaktya nitya yukta upasate. Pure devotees are always engaged in glorifying Krishna. Krishna Kirtan. Yesterday we were reading Krishnot Kirtana Gana Naratana Paro. The six Goswamis of Vrindavan were very much attached to, they loved to always glorify Krishna in loud voices, singing his names and dancing. So, Satatam Kirtiyanto Mam, and endeavoring with great endeavor and determination in Krishna consciousness, not just to kind of take it easy, relax, don't strain yourself too much. We don't hear pure devotees saying like this. They're personally fully engaged in Krishna service, endeavoring with great determination and offering obeisances to Krishna. In this way, always fully engaged in Krishna service. So for pure devotees, they set an example by their behavior. But it's not that they're thinking, now I have to do this, now I have to do that. But the rules, we say that the pure devotees don't have to follow the rules and regulations of devotional service. They don't have to. The rules and regulations are to help one fix one's mind on Krishna. Smartavya satatam Vishnu, Vishmartavya Najatu chit sarva vidhi nishedasya etayo eva kinkaraha. All the rules and regulations of devotional service are based on two principles. One is to always remember Krishna, and the other one is never to forget Krishna, which means the same thing, but it's just emphasis, just to emphasize, practically one principle. So all the rules and regulations are meant for that. So you may think, well, the pure devotees, they don't have to follow this, we hear that, because they're already thinking of Krishna, so they don't have to follow the rules and regulations. So what happens? One day you wake up, ping, I became a pure devotee. Okay, now I'll sleep all morning. No need to get up and go to Mangalarti or chant Hare Krishna, because I'm a pure devotee, so I don't need to. But rather, the rules and regulations, they not only help us to think of Krishna, but the rules and regulations are based on the natural behavior of what pure devotees do. So this, we have among the rules and regulations, we should chant Hare Krishna. But the pure devotees do that naturally, automatically. And we do, what's in the book? Okay, I have to chant, okay, all right, okay. Pick up my beads and Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare. Whew, how many more rounds to go? Finished. Thank God. Now I can do whatever I like. But the pure devotees, they are attached to chanting the names of Krishna. They don't have to tell them, you should get up early in the morning, but they don't like to sleep. We heard Nidra Hara Vihara Kadi Vijito. They were reading yesterday, the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. They gave up eating and sleeping. It's not that they thought, let me give up eating and sleeping, but they're so absorbed in Krishna consciousness that they didn't even think. They forgot, just like it's described about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that he would eat, he would be reminded. His servant Govinda would say, it's time for you to eat. Oh, okay. He wasn't thinking. That's because of deep absorption. The example is given of the arrow maker sitting on the side of a road. He's so absorbed in making an arrow perfect and straight and sharp that the king goes by and he doesn't even notice. When the king goes by, there's his whole entourage, and bands and big noise and Maharaj Ki Jai Ho. But he doesn't even notice because he's so absorbed. In the same way, we sometimes have the experience where our mind is distraught over some bad news or we're disturbed because of the way someone spoke to us or something like this. And we can't sleep at night because our mind is occupied otherwise. So the pure devotees, their mind is occupied with Krishna. And so they don't think to sleep. They're so eager to take the opportunity at every moment to hear and chant about Krishna. They think that every moment passed by without hearing and chanting about Krishna is a colossal waste of time. So the natural behavior of pure devotees is offered to the neophyte devotees as a regulated pattern to follow, so that by following it, we may also gain the taste for hearing and chanting about and remembering and serving Krishna. So Manu is a pure devotee. Here's Swayambhuva Manu. And it's described how he worshipped the Lord in a regulated way, according to rules and regulations, taking kusha grass. Kusha grass is not essential to worship Lord Vishnu. One may worship him simply by remembering him. But it is pure and it is liked by Krishna. Krishna likes pure things. So the devotees try to make everything very nice for Krishna, for his pleasure. Krishna likes kusha grass. He likes copper. He states, Lord Varahadev states in his Purana, it's recorded in the Purana, Varaha Purana, that he likes even better than gold and silver utensils made of copper in his worship. So sometimes devotees think, well, let's get some silver paraphernalia for worshipping the Lord. But he clearly states he prefers copper. Why? Well, he's God. He's a person. Everyone has their personal preference. He's also a person. So he likes that. He likes to play on a flute. It's also very practical for calling his cows and his gopis. So he could play any musical instrument he liked. He could sit in a studio and make synthesized music or play a bass guitar or a saxophone or whatever he likes, but he doesn't like it. It's incongruent with his lila, and he likes. He has the feeling, I am a cowherd boy. So he acts according to that. So he likes, here it's mentioned, kusha grass is very pure. So that is used by devotees in the service of the Lord. You can also sit on a plastic mat, but that won't be so pleasing to the Lord. Although it's not essential, the essential point is to offer everything with love to Krishna. But then if we do love him, then we'll try to arrange things in the way that he likes, and Shastra describes that. That's why there are so many rules and regulations. We think, so many rules and regulations. Why do I have to follow them? Because Krishna likes them. We're supposed to be serving Krishna. So many rules are there. Actually, not so many. For Vaishnavas, compared to Smartas, we have many less rules. Those Smarta means, you could say more or less what used to be called Hindu, but now Hindus have become simply, what is their Hinduism? But Smarta means to follow the Smritis. You don't know, but previously your family members, they were following the Smritis under the direction of the Brahmanas. The Smriti means the guidebooks for regulating how to behave. And in various Smritis, Parashara Smriti, Manu Smriti is the most well-known. Hindu law is based on Manu Smriti. And Parashara Smriti, Yajnavalkya Smriti, Narada Smriti. These are some of the 20 best-known Smritis, or books of laws which are taken, laws of everyday life which are taken from the scriptures, and they're selected by the Smriti Acharyas, those who make them, as guides for people how to behave. And so, because in the Shastras there are so many directions, so they select certain directions which are suitable for certain persons in certain times and places. Manu is the all-encompassing one. Of course, Manu also, I mean, it only covers certain areas of human life. There are so many. And then and according to Sampradaya, in our Gauriya Sampradaya, we have Hari Bhakti Vilas, that's Vaishnava Smriti. In Madhvacharya Sampradaya, Madhvacharya wrote Sadachar Smriti. There are so many Smritis. How to behave according to Varna, according to Ashram. There's also, not many, but there's at least one Smriti for Stri Dharma, how a woman should behave. So the Smartas, they have so many rules. In Bengal, the Raghunandan Smriti is everything. Everything you can imagine about, like what time to get up in the morning, and then first of all you have to put your right foot on the earth, then you recite certain mantra, that's the Kshama Prarthana mantra to the earth, Bhumi Devi, that I'm placing my foot on you, so please forgive me, you are my mother, so just as the mother tolerates the kicking of her child, it's very everything. In how to design a house, of course, this comes under Vastu Shastra. And then where the entrance should be, where the kitchen should be, where in the kitchen the fire should be. So many rules and regulations. So to help us lead our lives in harmony with the universe, in all respects, including all the subtle laws of the universe, which people in the modern age are not aware of at all. So the Smartas have many, many rules, and the Vaishnavas also have many rules, but the sum and substance of all the rules is to always think of Krishna and never forget him. But still, compared to modern life, there are many rules, because, first of all, in the Western countries, there's no knowledge of all these subtle principles of human life, and there's no knowledge of who God is, and that he's very vague idea that he's a person. So how he should be worshipped. There's no idea. There's no system of puja in the Western countries. Even though they say God the Father, but they have no idea how to relate to him or personally worship him. And they even decry the personal worship of the Lord. So especially in the Archan Vidhi, the process of deity worship, there are many rules and regulations based on doing what is pleasing to Krishna. One, in the public temples, that worship is restricted to brahmanas, male brahmanas. There are reasons for that, because brahmana means he should know who is the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, you can stick anyone and wave something round and round and ring a bell, but he should know what he's doing. And brahmana means trained in brahminical culture of cleanliness, because one should be clean and pure to worship the Lord. So there are so many different rules and regulations to follow. Manu has given his Manu Smriti, and there are so many other smritis. In the modern age, people tend to be lazy. That is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam also. Primary symptoms of Kali Yuga. That prayanal payasa sabhya kalavasmin yuge janaha mandasu manda mateyo manda bhagya hi upadrutaha. That in this age of Kali, people have short lives. They're also lazy, unlucky, of weak intelligence. And their minds are always disturbed. They're quarrelsome, and their minds are always disturbed. So people are lazy. They don't... Of course, you may say, well, we're Germans, we're not lazy. We work hard. But lazy for spiritual realization, particularly. The British, when they came to India, they thought, oh, these Indian people are lazy. They're not working hard. We should build factories and make them work hard. So now, by the greatest of the British, you're all working hard. In India, in Europe, they have, what, 40-hour week, is it? What's the... But in India, it's at least 60 hours. And no one, everyone, from the rickshaw driver to the whatever, everyone's working. No one less than 50 hours. And your company, they might give you a Sunday off, and then they call you on your cell phone, come to work anyway. Like that. Even some companies, they say, we have a bed here, we'll bring you food, and that's it. You just stay here. When you want to sleep, sleep. When you want to eat, tell us, we'll bring you something. The rest of the time, work. And then people have nervous breakdowns, and they employ someone else, and it goes on like that. So, but previously life was not working so hard, so the British thought lazy, but not lazy. They were getting up early in the morning and going to the temple or at home doing puja or performing yajnas, spiritual activities in the morning and spiritual activities in the evening, walking to holy places, going on pilgrimage, just like, you know, they'll do the dindi, walking from Nagpur to Pandharpur. So, and people in South India, people walk to the nearest, well, especially in Tamil Nadu, to the nearest Divya Desham. That will be their pilgrim. Or they'll have a lifelong ambition to go to Tirupati. Nowadays you get on a train and go. But in those days it might be a 3 weeks walk, 4 weeks walk, and you have to plan it out well in advance. Usually after the harvesting, and when there's no work, or after planting, when there's not much work in the fields, then you have to plan how much time it will take. And you have to, 3 weeks walking, 3 weeks back, and then maybe spend 1 week there. And then all the way along the path, simply remembering the Lord. So people might have a lifelong ambition. When will I have the opportunity to do that? So they weren't lazy for spiritual understanding. They were very busy for spiritual understanding. Rising early in the morning, that was the norm. People would rise early in the morning. But now they've adopted the Western way of life. And we used to go on Harinam after Mangal Arati around the towns. But now if you go, people say, why are you disturbing us? Because they're sleeping. They would be, normally people would be up early in the morning, but now they have TV, so they're watching late at night. And they've become lazy for spiritual realization. So one should not be lazy. It's easy to cut corners. Cutting corners. That means instead of going on the road, you just go across and cut the corner. But it's easier for us not to follow the rules and regulations. And we often cite time, place and circumstance. But usually, as what I can see, it's usually just our laziness. That we just think, well, what does it matter? You know, Krishna's not going to complain. So, but this attitude will never make us, never bring us to Krishna consciousness. We see that Manu, even though a self-realized soul, he followed the elaborate process of worshipping the Lord. So, if at all we are to perform deity worship, then we have to follow the rules and regulations. Sometimes we hear that somebody say, well, it's only Gaur Nitai. Only Gaur Nitai. So they say, well, they're not installed, so it doesn't matter. What does it mean they're not installed? Whoever heard of uninstalled deities? What, are you worshipping a piece of wood or you're worshipping the Lord? If he's Bhagawan, then you have to worship him as Bhagawan. If he's a piece of wood, then, you know, then it doesn't make any difference. So out of laziness, we make so many excuses, but we have to follow the examples of the acharyas who risked their lives for the Lord. And not only risked their lives, but gave their lives. We find that when the Muslims attacked Sri Rangam, when was that? About almost 1,000 years ago. Then they just, all the Brahmins there, just killed them all. 1,200 of them. How can they defend against soldiers with swords? And so, fortunately, the Lord himself was taken away before that. And so the devotees, they risk their lives for the sake of the Lord. And that even somewhat more than 25 years ago now, it must be in Mayapur, there was an attack of dacoits on our temple. And then Bhakti Raghav Swami, who was a brahmacharya at that time, even though he had a bad leg from polio, he couldn't walk properly, but helplessly, he went to defend the deities. What can he do against a gang of dacoits? And they threw a bomb and blew off his leg. Luckily, they didn't kill him. So he was sitting there in a pool of blood. Anyway, his leg wasn't good, so didn't make that much difference. But there are other devotees. One devotee had his arm chopped off in Kenya when he tried. He stood in front of the deities as robbers attacked. So they're giving their life for the Lord. This is the standard. We sing. We like to sing, Radha Krishna Pranmo Jugala Kisho Jibane Morane Gati Arnahimo. Radha and Krishna are my life. In life and death, I have no other goal. So it's easy to sing, but we should see that if we then at least archan all aspects of our service. We should do very nicely for Krishna, you know, taking the trouble to do so. You may think, well, it doesn't matter. It's getting up early in the morning, it's a little troublesome, so I won't bother. But if you don't bother, then you don't become Krishna conscious, that's all. Because as I was saying yesterday, this science of bhakti yoga, Prabhupada subtitled The Nectar of Devotion, The Complete Science of Bhakti Yoga. If we follow the process, we get the result. We don't follow the process, you don't get the result, that's all. So Manu is showing us, he doesn't have to, but he's showing, he doesn't have to, but he likes to worship the Lord, and he's showing us the process. He's an acharya. That if we follow this process, we will be benefited. Unfortunately, we tend to be attached to so-called material benefit. One devotee was telling me, he was leading up a preaching center. There was one devotee who was there, brahmachari. So he used to go out regularly on book distribution, but, you know, a little slow in doing it. And he refused. If I go, I must go out with someone. I need association. I can't go out unless I have association. Then at some point in time he decided, well, I'm not going to be a brahmachari all my life. I need to get married. So I better get some money together. So I'll start selling incense. And then he became so enthusiastic for selling incense and going out. He didn't need any association. And very fired up. So his enthusiasm for distributing books wasn't so much for the sake of pleasing Krishna, wasn't so much as his enthusiasm for selling incense for the sake of establishing his home sweet home. So we have to see. We are in the line of acharyas, Swayambhu. Actually, Swayambhu means Brahma, but Manu is one of the acharyas, the Mahajan, great teachers of Krishna consciousness. So, yesterday we were talking about how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he brought the highest gift of love of Krishna in Vrindavan on the level of the gopis, and this is our sampradaya. So again, it's easy to talk, and we should talk, we should discuss these things, but let's look at the other end also. I mean, we have the ideal, and where are we? And we should see how to close the gap, how to actually advance on the path of loving Krishna. It begins with the path of Sharanagati, surrendering to Krishna. In Sharanagati, it's all these six principles of Sharanagati. They're all practical. How we live our lives, anukulyena sankalpa, making the firm determination to act only in that way, to only do things that will help us to come to Krishna. And pratikul yasya varjanam, to give up everything that will inhibit the development of our Krishna consciousness. Rakshishyatiti vishvaso, to have faith that Krishna will protect us. And guptritvaivaranam tata, that Krishna will maintain us. That means not going to different demigods, or even the idea that I have to arrange for my security in old age. And so, but faith in Krishna, that Krishna will look after me. If he wants, he can look after this body. But what does it mean, looking after this body anyway? Because anyway it's going to die. So that gives us the inspiration to atmanikshepa, to just throw ourselves at the lotus feet of Krishna in full surrender. And also with dainya, the feeling of full dependence and helplessness. I am very fallen, I am not very great. As Prabhupada is discussing in this purport, that Manu, even though very great by material estimation, he considered that whatever I have, it is simply the mercy of the Lord, my prestigious position in human society. So from this position, let me act in a manner to teach others about Krishna and not become proud that I am so great. So there are so many points that could be discussed here, but I don't have time because I have to go soon. So I'll leave you all to discuss it more tomorrow. And I'll take one or two questions if there are any, please. Yeah, you have a question.
She was telling that it's important with a proper mood to worship the Lord.
It's important to worship the Lord with a proper mood. Otherwise that won't be accepted as worship.
Yeah.
Unless one has the proper attitude, that won't be accepted.
And sometimes
it's not just a matter of, we're saying, you're talking about following the rules and regulations, but even if one follows the rules and regulations but doesn't have the proper attitude, if he thinks I'm the best devotee, or if he thinks that the deity is an idol that is imbued with some mystic power, we have all these wrong attitudes, then that will not be accepted by Krishna. That's why Brahmana has to worship the Lord. He has to know who is Krishna by hearing. Brahmana means not just some thread thrown over his shoulder, but he's trained in understanding who is Krishna, what Krishna wants, how to serve him. both the procedures and the attitude with which to serve Him. Yeah, so what's your question?
So the question is that it seems like, for example, in our temple, it's very, you say, less devotees. And there's many temples, so there's always, what you say about Brahmins?
Oh, about deity worship? Well, actually, in Prabhupada's time, when Prabhupada was here, when we set up small preaching centers, we didn't install deities. We had the Guru Gauranga altar, the picture of the Pancha Tattva, and then the picture of Prabhupada, and maybe the other acharyas also. And even to worship that, one had to be first initiated. That was the standard. Now we change the standard, and we're not following Prabhupada's. Or not only Prabhupada's, but in any sampradaya, one has to be Brahminically initiated to worship deities. But anyway, you have uninstalled deities. What is the practical thing? I don't know. Ask your GBC or see what Prabhupada said. I don't know, but this it wasn't the standard. And Prabhupada said that before installing deities, it's right in his books, there have to be at least 12 initiated brahmanas. It's right in his books. Read his books, you'll see. So we got around that by worshipping but not installing, which is another weird idea. You kind of, one hand you're pretending to worship, on the other hand you're pretending that they're not really deities. It's so strange. I've seen in Russia they have even uninitiated devotees worshipping. They're Brahmins, but they're too lazy. They don't want to do. So why did they accept their Brahmana thread? Prabhupada said, one time he said to one GBC member, you go among all the Brahmanishya devotees, ask them if they know the Gayatri Mantra, if they're chanting. If they don't, take it back. Convert them back to Shudras. Prabhupada wanted this Brahminical initiation taken seriously. He was very serious about deity worship. He said, one of the last things he said, I'm very concerned after I pass away that the proper stand in deity worship won't be followed. So sometimes we think, well, it's good for preaching, but you can't just bring the deity as a kind of preaching tool.
That means there's there's a possibility to do seva apparat to deities, and is there, what kind of reaction is there
Well, it said the Gaunitai don't accept any offences, but then their devotees might do. That's why Prabhupada didn't want the even Gaunitai deities inside. Even one time the deities of Gaunitai, just this high, in Edinburgh, they opened the temple and then they closed it down without asking Prabhupada. Prabhupada was very upset that once you have established the deities, you can't move them and you can't close the temple. You just can't do it. It is a great offense. So that's why you should be ready before you start worshipping. You should be ready. I'm just reflecting on all this because there's a big discussion going on email at the present moment. There's some deities have just been installed in India in a very new temple, and some devotees are asking, you know, what's the arrangement? And it's easy to install, but then you have to do, you know, what is it, 7 aartis, 5 offerings. This was the standard Prabhupada gave for Radha Krishna deities. 7 aartis, 5 offerings, daily dressing twice, puja once. So it's easy to start, but then another thing that's, anyway, I won't go on. It's something that upsets me, but there's no time to discuss it all now. Hare Krishna. You had a question?
If you have time.
I don't, but ask it anyway.
You mentioned about chanting, like chanting without considering Krishna or without thinking about Krishna. So just like chanting something. And so what is the destiny? Because I myself is not thinking mostly about Krishna when I'm chanting.
No, well, even Prabhupada said don't. In the beginning, don't try to think, just hear. Because the name of Krishna is Krishna. So in the beginning our chanting is imperfect, but we should go on hearing the name with faith and Krishna will help us. It's not that you're going to go to hell by chanting Hare Krishna. we'll be delivered from hell, minimally.